Welcome everyone to All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast 240, recording this on the 20th of December 2017. I am Steve Litchfield, and with me I have Rafe Blandford at last.
Hello everybody. Yes, it's great to be back on the podcast just before Christmas, and to get into the spirit of things, I believe Steve is quaffing champagne in the background, so apologies in advance if there's any unscheduled laughter or stumbles. We're both recording this as the kind of year comes to a close. I guess we'll get to the happy Christmas at the end because we've got a few things we want to talk about, the Windows mobile world and mobile in general. The usual diversions, I think, are assured.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I guess most podcasts go down the route of, you know, the best of this year and the worst of this year. So, Rafe, we have the best Windows phone or Windows 10 mobile phone of 2017. And there are only two to choose from, which makes the best and the worst rather interesting. And as the worst only arrived this morning at my house, that the Alcatel Idol 4 Pro was actually arguably going to be the best and the worst device of 2017, which setting a new record.
Yes, I mean, it's a bit unfortunate with the way things have been in the Windows mobile world. Obviously, we've got much less hardware to talk about, but I think the winner is pretty clear here. We've talked about the Alcatel Idol Pro 4 a lot on the podcast, and actually we're quite fond of it, of the device. It helps, I guess, that it's one of the higher-end devices, but it's also been well put together. I think its kind of ancestry as an Android device almost gives it an advantage here. It's sort of well-established in the market, but also Alcatel have given it a bit of a support. And actually, for those that want a kind of up-to-date Windows 10 mobile device, you know, it's a good choice, especially when we think about some of the other devices like the Lumia 950 no longer being available to buy effectively, unless you go for the second-hand option, with the X3 kind of being effectively end-of-life. I mean, you can still get hold of it in some places, but perhaps not the most sensible choice. And we think, as we've talked about, there's some compromises there. So yeah, the best is easy. I haven't really seen the worst, so I can't really talk about it because, as you say, it's literally just arrived this morning. We talked about the Wiley Fox Pro on one of the earlier podcasts, but I guess it, you know, you've only had it for sort of 24 hours, Steve, but the fact that you've already managed to label it worse, is that because it's the only other device, or is there, I suspect there may be something that you're not entirely pleased with about it?
Well, in fairness, and we did kind of run down some of the specs and impressions before it had arrived with Steve Heinrich on the last podcast, but just very briefly, and for your benefit, I will run down the specs. But before I give you those specs, let me just say that it feels a treat in the hand. It's got a rubberized removable back with a replaceable battery underneath. It's got a headphone socket. It is micro USB, unfortunately, but then you might kind of expect that at the budget end of the spectrum. In the hand, it's really a nice little handset. It's not the Windows Phone, Windows 10 mobile flagship. It's not even a mid-ranger, really. But for a new device running the OS to come out in full production status with the might of Amazon behind it and a whole network of distributors and partners selling to businesses, do you know, I think this actually might have some legs. The specs, Rafe, this is to put it into context, it is £190, including VAT, if you buy it on your own as a consumer. But yeah, businesses are going to not have to pay the VAT, and they're going to buy it in bulk. So we're looking at probably about £130 for them for the handset. A 5-inch LCD 720p display, Snapdragon 210, 2 gig of RAM, 16 gig of internal storage, plus micro SD, LTE Cat 4, 2100 mAh battery, 8 megapixel main camera, flash, 2 megapixel front camera, and you get UK and EU adapters in the box. Overall, it's a nice little package. I suspect I couldn't live with something this low spec day to day. I think it might just drive me quietly insane. But I think my contention, and this is how I'm going to start my review, which I'm kind of starting to write at the moment, is that for a small business wanting, say, you know, half a dozen or a dozen handsets to put load up with office software and configurations and custom UWP apps, all that sort of stuff, and to hand out to their engineers and to their salespeople, out into knowing that these guys are going to have iPhones on the side with their own private SIMs, but they can put a work SIM, a work number, all the work software, all the work data, And then it's completely secure. There's no danger of people sideloading or being tricked into hacking on Android malware. It's actually a very secure, usable device for a small business. And that's how I'm going to approach the review.
Yes, sir. It's really interesting to see this come out. I mean, you mentioned it kind of on the last podcast, and we've talked about this before, kind of the price point, but probably just worth reiterating. Yes, it's pretty low cost, especially when you compare it to kind of the Alcatel Overall Pro and other high-end handsets. It does feel, when you do a comparison with a similarly spec'd Android device, that it's quite expensive. But I think the price in one sense is, you know, meaningless in that sense, because people are going to be buying this very deliberately as a Windows 10 mobile handset, and in that sense, you know, very little choice. And it is competitive if you talk about the overall budget, especially as you said, you know, probably bulk discounts, no VAT, and all of that sort of thing. This is not a handset that I really would expect a consumer to buy. But for all the reasons we talked about before, you know, companies who are effectively rolling out a whole bunch of handsets, maybe they've got an app they want to be able to run, or as you said, they're kind of very tied into Microsoft, maybe they want to lock down the phones, or whatever that choice may be. Unless you're sort of thinking, okay, we'll fully commit to Android, or we want to give everyone an iPhone, you know, this is a choice that some companies are still going to have, because they've made a decision when Windows 10 Mobile maybe was at its height that, you know, they wanted to invest on Microsoft as their mobile platform. I guess some of them may be regretting it now, but it's clear, talking to Wiley Fox, that they feel there's demand from this. And actually, from what we've seen in terms of sales, it's out of stock on Amazon, which suggests at least the first batch of these have been snapped up pretty rapidly. One thing I'm really encouraged to hear you say is that kind of the build quality and the feel in the hand is good, because I think that's all important, because most of the people using these devices are not really going to be caring about the spec. They will care about kind of the robustness and, you know, is it, you know, reasonably good to use, and just that kind of day-to-day interaction with a piece of hardware that lives in their pocket. As you say, if it's a company phone, for most people it's likely to be their second device. So, you know, you kind of labeled it as worst device, and that kind of made me afraid that there was something not very good about it. But actually, I think you would have to say, you know, there's almost two best devices, because they're opposite ends of the spectrum. They're aimed at kind of very different audiences in many ways. And there's no real clunker of a Windows 10 mobile phone. And if I was going to label one of the worst devices, I guess it would be one of the failed kind of crowd-funded campaigns that has been out there, kind of the vaporware Windows 10 mobile phone. So I'm going to say that the Wiley Fox Pro is actually one of the best Windows 10 mobile devices of the year.
And Well, that's stretching the point too far. Do go, by the way, while I'm chatting, Rafe, do go and bring up my gallery from this morning, because I did do some nice photographs of the inbox contents and the phone's hardware, which will give you kind of an idea. It kind of feels a bit like a Galaxy S4 or Galaxy S3, that kind of curved back that peels off, that kind of design, and the headphone jack and the data charging port are kind of moulded into the plastic removable back. It's kind of... This design is just perfect for businesses. Now, I'm talking about the average employee who may get one of these handed to him by his boss. Now, the employee was going to have an iPhone or an Android phone of some description, no doubt, and that will have all their games and their social media apps. And when they turn to this Windows 10 mobile fairly low-end handset, they're going to think of it as that slow and slightly tedious Windows thing that their work has forced them to have. But it will do what their work wants them to do. It will have those applications that have to tie in, so they can fill in the checkboxes, they can fill in their notes, they can access company emails, all that stuff, and that will be kept entirely separate from their Snapchatting and game playing and all the stuff they get onto on their Android phone or iPhone. And they absolutely will think of this Wiley Fox Pro as the slower of the two devices, and it absolutely is. Then again, from the work's point of view, that these are dirt cheap to replace. They could just slap in a new battery if the batteries die. If they scratch up the back or mash it up, they just put a new back on. They're going to be robust, cheap, and highly secure. And that's basically a lot of the things that businesses want in a work handset.
Yeah, I think particularly if you're doing that kind of company-wide deployment and standardizing across devices, there's a lot to be said for that. I think the other platforms have come a long way in terms of being able to lock things down and make things secure. So I don't think that's particularly unique to Windows. That said, I mean, it's fair enough to say that familiarity and that kind of ease of just making sure it all works, I can see the appeal there. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily get too carried away by it, because I don't think it's quite as bad as the old days, where actually, you know, there were real differences and choosing an enterprise device was not, I won't say a hit and miss affair, but there were certainly reasons to go for each platform. One of the things we haven't really talked about here is I would argue that having kind of a simple work device, especially if it's a second device, there's something that holds some appeal to that. Although it's unfamiliar, you don't know how it works. I don't think anyone could ever say it's not kind of obvious how Windows 10 Mobile works once you've been introduced to the first few features. And that can be in contrast to some of the lower tier Android devices where you have to learn its idiosyncrasies. And more to the point, this thing won't slow down. It'll probably be a pretty consistent experience. I mean, calling it a smartphone, some people will say it feels like a feature phone with my work stuff on it, but actually maybe that's part of the appeal, because you don't need it to be the all singing or dancing phone. You've got your other device for that. I mean, it, in some ways it feels like we're reaching a bit to justify this, and yeah, there's always a fair sense of that. But Wiley Fox have introduced this for a particular reason. I mean, they've got a pretty good reputation in producing decent, I wouldn't say middle of the road, but you know, capable devices aimed at a certain type of user. And you know, the fact they've executed this on Windows 10 Mobile, honestly, a bit of a surprise to me. But as I say, that kind of sense almost that is Windows 10 Mobile actually a really interesting choice to have as that feature phone work device that has the tools, the email, the Word, Excel stuff on it that you need it to do. Yeah, it kind of goes back to the bad old days of having to carry two devices, but that was going to happen anyway. Consider the alternative would be, I mean, you mentioned kind of the S4 or any of the older or the low tier Android devices that, you know, probably the build quality would be similar if you choose the right one, but often, you know, there's some poorer choices out there. You know, Android on lower powered hardware, especially once you start loading it up with a few things, can feel a bit slow and clunky. So I suspect the kind of longer term experience on something like this would actually be maintained pretty well. For me, I suspect it would come down to whether the fact there's some bespoke applications. So if your company has developed, you know, maybe a field force application or something that, you know, gives you your task when you're out and about, or whatever it might be, or maybe access to some knowledge repository or sales information or whatever it happens to be, then, you know, this becomes a really interesting choice. If it's just the standard built-in applications, as we talked about a few podcasts ago, you can get a pretty good Microsoft experience now on iPhone and Android. You can get Outlook, you can get all the Office tools, and actually Microsoft's kind of device management tools and those enterprise tools to roll things out actually work with those devices as well. Maybe not quite as thick and seamlessly in some ways if you are the IT department, but they certainly can do. And more to the point, there's other choices out there, whether that's Samsung Knox or one of the other third-party kind of device management tools or suites. Nonetheless, interesting device, and kind of as we close off the year, really quite a surprise to see Wiley Fox come out with this. I mean, it was previewed at IFA. It's made it onto the market. It is actually available, as you say, for sale through Amazon, although it has sold out right now. I suspect it'll also be offered through a few kind of enterprise channels as well. But all in all, I look forward to reading your review about it, and kind of once you've used it for a bit, are there any gotchas that are kind of hiding after the unboxing?
Yeah, I just wanted to return to one point. You mentioned in passing that you agreed that Android and iOS are fairly locked down these days. And that is kind of true. Even talking about vulnerabilities in the OS, a lot of major brand devices do get security updates these days. The nightmare scenario, Rafe, and the one I want to pitch at you, is that let's say you're an employee. I've just given you a Galaxy S8. And you're happy with it. It's nice and fast. It's got all the Microsoft services, Office 365, etc., etc. But in your spare time, you're addicted to this particular American show, and it's not a TV show. It's not available in any other means. And you found this little application that you can sideload at an APK that gives you it's slightly illegal, slightly dodgy access to this special TV show or this special channel. So what, of course, you do? You go into settings, you check under install from unknown sources. You sideload this APK that you happen to download from this dodgy site on the internet, and all kind of works. But in the background, there's malware and there's Trojans and some things mining your data, and potentially for the company that's got you signed into all their data and their Office accounts, potentially this software could be keystroke logging or screen tap logging, and basically accessing data that your company really wouldn't want you to access. So that is the nightmare scenario, that once you give people an Android phone, there is the possibility that they can do all sorts of things of their own volition which will compromise the enterprise data.
That is true. I mean, in theory, the same thing could happen on a Windows device, although I think that's probably a very theoretical possibility rather than something that's remotely likely to happen. But yes, that would really depend on the kind of policy management for the Android devices. in this scenario, I would envisage that the devices would be locked down and you'd be prevented from changing that check mark, being able to sideload third-party applications or potentially even install things from the Play Store. But you're right in the sense that I'm not sure every enterprise would necessarily take those precautions. And so by default, kind of the default behavior of the Windows phones are more likely to be secure even before you make those decisions around policy management. And of course, you know, in that instance, there are going to be a lot of companies that maybe don't think about security quite as deeply as Steve does. And we'll just go, oh, yeah, we'll have the Android devices as they are. We'll have the Windows devices as they are. And I think you can make a strong argument that by default, you're less likely to have a data breach or have a security issue if you've gone down the Windows route. The cynics amongst people will say, well, that's because there's hardly anyone using them and there's no dodgy software out there. And that's true to an extent. But I think, as we've talked about in the past, just the approach to the platform as a whole is more secure on Windows. Android, you know, by its very nature, is less secure. I would just be a bit cautious in saying that's always going to be the case, because absolutely you can lock down an Android device. You'll probably find an enterprising employee will find a way to get around it. And so that's what I mean by there's kind of not that distinction as there might have been a few years ago. And actually, increasingly, there's quite a lot of sophistication around the mobile device management products. Not least because a lot of the time now people are also bringing their own devices. It'll be interesting to know, you know, companies buying something like the Wiley Fox Pro or indeed an Android equivalent to give to their employees, are they doing that and locking it down? Because certainly for my experience, there still seems to be very much a mix of companies kind of locking everything down and for good reason versus kind of giving out a device because, you know, people don't want to buy a second phone to put their work SIM in. Or there's a kind of bring your own device policy, which, you know, has its own risks and challenges to think about. And that can be something as simple as imposing the need to have a PIN code or security on the phone if you've got a company email on it. And there's kind of obvious reasons for that versus, you know, as you say, applications that could potentially store quite sensitive data or have access to some cloud storage or, you know, your attachments have come in via email that could get compromised relatively easy. I mean, it's very easy to talk about the kind of nightmare scenario. I mean, I think the reality is in most cases, it's not going to happen, but you always hear about the occasion when it does. And it's certainly fair to say that smartphones and people's personal accounts on them are probably one of the easiest things to get access to a corporate network, you know, be that through social engineering or just because people have so much on their devices. And I think there's inherently probably an attitude prevalent amongst the users that thinks about it less on a phone just because that's where it is. You know, if it's on a company laptop or a computer in a workplace, people are kind of a bit more aware of that. On the smartphone, you know, maybe it's ignorance, maybe it's just a different attitudes to use. Also, the number of applications you're likely to install. I mean, you kind of alluded to, you know, be it through piracy or illegal content, clearly sideloading does happen. And even legitimate applications are sometimes caught out from that as well, you know, having some kind of spyware built into them. You know, there's been recent challenges around it sort of actually being in the IDEs, the development kits for applications, and developers almost inadvertently allowing stuff onto the phones. And we're seeing the same thing on web pages with sort of some web pages will mine Bitcoin in the background. I'm sure we'll get, if we haven't already got Android applications kind of doing the same thing, although efficiency of that might be questionable. But there is still a kind of debate to be had around security. And, you know, Wiley Fox is kind of part of that. I feel that that's probably overplayed a little bit. But what is interesting is if a company has invested in kind of the Windows ecosystem and they've made that choice that they're going to deploy all their smartphones using Windows, and maybe they're choosing iOS and Windows as well, but they want kind of a cheaper device solution. You know, if you need to get a kind of couple of £100 device out, this is a viable option. It can have the full kind of exchange with all the contact information on it, the office documents that we've talked about before, and potentially a couple of custom applications. I think just the ease of rolling that out and being able to hand it over to employees is not to be underestimated. But I think that's largely from companies that have already made that choice to be on Windows. I don't think anyone is going to choose to go on it now. I mean, actually, all the stories recently have been, whether it's a New York Police Department or, you know, a Salesforce organization, have been backing away from it. But of course, that's a decision that, you know, sometimes will take multiple years to implement. It's not something you don't just suddenly throw away a deployment of company phones. And you kind of mentioned it, actually, you alluded to it here. It could be a replacement for broken phones or, you know, ones where the battery life has become very poor. And, you know, if you can make your workforce more efficient for the sake of buying, you know, phones at a couple of £100, in some cases, that's going to be an absolute no-brainer. I think you're right about the security. I just don't see that as a motivating factor, really, in most cases. I see it far more as, you know, this is, you know, Wiley Fox being really smart about filling a gap in the market.
Well, hopefully, yes. And I'll elaborate more on this in my full review. Just while I was talking, hopefully, Rafe, and while you were talking, you were browsing through my image gallery. Anything strike you there other than sort of the nice black rubberized finish and the overall reasonable fit and finish for the price?
I would just say that actually it's got everything you need in the box, including you alluded to kind of the international charger, a headset and the cables. In a world where increasingly some of those things are missed out or aren't a particularly high quality,
yeah.
You know, again, it just makes it easy to hand over the box to your employer and go, yeah, it's got everything you need in it. Knock yourself out. And yes, there's something to be appreciated in. I guess it's a classic design from a few years ago, but it's relatively cheap to produce, but it's durable and long lasting and kind of proven. And so in that sense, it makes a lot of sense.
Yes, and of course, me being me and rather ruining the day that manufacturers decided to stop putting in replaceable batteries and decided to stop putting in 3.5mm headphone jacks. To see this with a slightly, quote, retro design is actually very, very welcome. And I think that's actually true for businesses and enterprises on the whole. The more you can make things flexible in terms of hardware, where you can swap out components and you can plug things in, I think that probably makes more of a difference to them than just to consumers, who are usually quite happy to go with whatever Apple's doing that year.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true.
Okay. Now, while all this was happening over the last month or so, while you were been very busy at your work, I understand, Microsoft and Qualcomm have revealed, and loads of podcasts have commented on this, we won't go into detail, but the Snapdragon 845, Also, some always connected PCs running Windows 10 on ARM. So this is kind of the full Windows 10, but obviously, as it sounds, compiled for ARM processors. Most devices will ship with what's called Windows 10S, which is Windows 10, but only running store applications, i.e. universal Windows platform applications. And most of these are actually coming with a little an offer whereby you can upgrade to the full Windows 10 in running x86 apps and legacy apps, etc., for the first few months if you wanted to go that way. Or you can just leave it for your employees or yourself for extra security and staying on Windows 10S. So we have, from the event, we have the HP Envy X2, and I'm not expecting you to have had hands-on with any of these, Rafe, but hopefully you've seen some of the pictures, or the Asus NovaGo. We've seen a lot of hybrid devices. Both of us have got Surface Pros. These are very much in the same mould, but the battery life is the most interesting thing here. It's not just Windows 10 as you know and love it on a hybrid like a Surface Pro, whereby you get about 10 hours battery life. These are boasting over 20 hours of battery life on a single charge. And the idea is that you can sort of pick them up and drop, put them down and use them throughout a working week and just charge them at the weekends, which is staggering, really, coming from a world, Rafe, where I was used to a laptop's having 2 hours battery life 4 or 5 years ago. How do we ever get from 2 hours to 20 hours? But this is definitely a step forwards.
It is. And actually, we really have smartphones to thank for this. I mean, in one sense, I think this is the closest you're going to get to a new Windows 10 mobile handset, albeit in a laptop form factor, because effectively what we're talking about here is, as you said, the Snapdragon chipset, but running full Windows, which is kind of something we've talked about for a long time, getting Windows on ARM. And obviously there was a bit of a kind of detour on Windows 8 and devices like the Nokia 2550, I think it was, kind of the red tablet that was running the cut down version of Windows. But as you say, this is full Windows if you do the upgrade. And that battery life is very impressive. But then you go, well, actually, it's battery life compared to a phone. And of course, we expect our phones to last a day or even a couple of days. And so 20-hour battery life in that sense doesn't seem so impressive. But of course, you're dealing with a much bigger screen here. Of course, you can have a bigger battery in these devices as well. So it's called an always connected PC. And Asus has done a good job. I think HP maybe has the edge for me, because it's kind of the evolution of the kind of transformer devices to basically have the same kind of design and thinking of a laptop, but essentially smartphone guts inside them. And that's why the battery life is so impressive. More impressive also, I think, from kind of a utility point of view, is the fact they're always on. The Surface devices got pretty close to that, but these are actually the real deal in that sense, because obviously it's kind of sleeping in the background. You switch it on, it's immediately available. It'll be really interesting to check out the performance of these. Actually, the early indications are pretty promising if you're keeping usage relatively light, which I think you would with a device like this. But again, I guess we shouldn't be surprised, because people forget just how capable smartphones are and just how powerful the processors are inside them. Because we have obviously been comparing ARM to Intel or AMD, that has kind of been less evident in the last few years, or really for the life of the smartphone. But absolutely, you know, the processor, whether it's inside your iPad, your Galaxy S8, or, you know, your Windows mobile device, have been becoming increasingly powerful. And all the co-processors that go with them, allowing you to do things like Cortana or Google Assistant or Siri, and also, you know, being able to play video for long periods of time. So, I mean, I was pretty intrigued by these, actually. I'm looking forward to seeing them in person, because it feels like the evolution of the tablet getting much closer to the laptop, whereas I think previously the tablet felt more like a bigger phone. But then I step back a bit further and go, well, actually, this is kind of like phones have become so all-dominant and dominating logistics in terms of the supply chain with processors and all the battery life, that actually suddenly it becomes viable to do this. And of course, it has a cost implication as well, although there's not all that information around about this at the moment. I think actually the cost is going to be pretty competitive when you compare it to kind of other ultra portable or transformer type devices.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm looking forward to actually trying one of these and learning a bit more. Some of the kind of early hands-on previews and reviews have actually been pretty encouraging in this sense. And I can't help but sort of, you know, this is an alternative route to Continuum in some ways, kind of going for a device like this, because you're kind of getting some of the advantages of smartphone in terms of the very long battery life, and actually pretty small in terms of the size and the weight and things to carry around. Of course, you know, they can have LTE connectivity as well. And when I think about my own use, actually use of the phone is relatively limited. And even when I am doing calls, it's often through things like Skype or Skype for Business or any of the other kind of over-the-top messaging or voice calling services. You know, calling a number happens less. And so these devices are perfectly capable of doing that. So kind of as a road warrior type device, or, you know, we've talked about companies just in the earlier part of the podcast providing phones for their employees, actually providing a device like this would be a pretty powerful tool, and I think would allow a lot of the collaboration. I guess it depends on the level of voice calls you're getting and the type, but really interesting. But also it just does bring to mind how much there has been a merger between tablets and desktops and tablets and phones, and actually now all coming together, and particularly in the Windows world. Part of me also goes, I wonder what a world would have looked like where Windows 10 Mobile had thrived a bit better, Microsoft had invested more money, maybe the Nokia acquisition had gone better, and we were now arriving at a point where you were able to have true Windows 10 on ARM devices, because it's not that much of a leap to go from these types of devices to a kind of a Windows phone form factor running full Windows 10, because we're not that far away from it on Windows 10 Mobile at the moment. But obviously the x86 thing is a big part of the big deal here. It might have just created a slight bit of difference. I think maybe it's one of those ones where it probably feels more meaningful than it actually is, especially when you compare it to the apps and the software available on other phones. But Microsoft's vision of kind of a single Windows running across all those devices still, to me, remains very compelling and kind of very elegant, more so the kind of the disconnect between OS X and iOS and the similar on Android, so where there just isn't really an equivalent. And Microsoft kind of arrived at the correct engineering thing that is to be admired, and it's kind of, if we're honest, it's the way we'd really like everything to work, and yet didn't really have the market success. So it makes me wonder how important that actually is. But yeah, really intriguing to see these devices. I mean, what's your take, Steve? I mean, is this something you'd be interested in if this was kind of a potential upgrade to your Surface device?
Well, personally, I do use a number of legacy applications, x86 apps from days gone by, Windows apps, and I would need them. So in that sense, then, it really kind of makes make sense to stay with Intel and to save my money. But these devices will get better, and at some point I'll break away and just be using UWP apps, even if they're, you know, wrappers of some kind on old code. But I can absolutely see the use case for Windows 10S and Windows 10S on ARM specifically. And certainly for my family, friends and relatives, to have them only using store apps, to know that they couldn't get tricked into downloading and running a virus of some kind. I think that would be a huge step forward and reduce the tech support bill down into my office. Just staying on Windows on ARM, really, and looking ahead to next year, there have been numerous patent reveals and renders online of what people might call a Surface phone. More likely, I think it's going to be called a Surface Mobile. And the clever money from the latest renders, and I'll be doing a whole editorial on this very shortly, is that we're looking at something like an 8-inch tablet, if you can picture that, Rafe, running Windows 10S. And then it folds in the middle through an Nokia E90 style, if you can remember that, the Nokia E90 style double hinge, so you can fold it 90 degrees, 180 degrees, and in this case, even right back through 360. So you'd have a clamshell device that can be used in about four or five different modes. In one of those modes, it's an 8-inch tablet. Then it's a normal 6-inch screened phablet. And then it's a sort of tented device. And then you can close it together with both screens on the inside, like an old Siam palm top. There's a lot going on here in terms of ideas. And the most impressive thing about the patent reveals is that how incredibly detailed some of the sketches and drawings are. These aren't just some designer saying, I've had a good idea, let's patent it so no one else can do it. This is an actual working prototype that someone's bothered to draw in exquisite engineering detail, which is why we're now seeing renders pop up around the place. And I say I'll be doing an editorial around it. But the clever money still says, Rafe, and we heard this a year ago, that in spring 2018, and that at the time it was a year ahead, and we were thinking, well, that's a long time. But we are not far off spring 2018 now. And this legendary Surface Mobile, whatever, LTE equipped, always on, telephony enabled, probably via a wired or a wireless headset, but you can make phone calls on it. This Surface Mobile is actually within touching distance. I think my prediction is it will be announced sometime March, April time, and it'll be first available in June, July, August over the summer, and roughly the same time frame, maybe a month after the two-in-ones we've just been talking about. Does any of this ring true? Is this just pie in the sky? Could this happen?
Well, there's nothing wrong with being optimistic, Steve, but yeah, I mean, it's certainly the direction that Microsoft has talked about heading, kind of quite vague details. I still think it's entirely possible. I mean, particularly when you kind of combine it with, you know, what we're talking about in the previous story with Windows on ARM. And, you know, thinking about what Microsoft has done in the hardware space with Surface and the Surface Book kind of line of devices, actually most of its investment, or most of the innovation in a lot of ways, has been on the hinge. That's what they've done in a clever way, you know, looking at Surface. And I think particularly the Surface Book as well. And, you know, it feels like a strange thing to say, but that's almost what's made their products stand out a little bit from the crowd. And they kind of did prove the transformer market to some extent. And, you know, arguably they've had one of the most innovative laptop designs out there with the Surface Book. So I can absolutely believe that kind of reinventing this kind of clamshell device is something that would make sense and fit in with what they've done so far. And you kind of look at the sketch on the patent and it feels like, oh yeah, this would be a really great thing to do. I don't know if it's one of those things that is kind of more attractive on paper, because I was always a bit disappointed that clamshells went away, you know, be that the Siam 5 or the communicators. They didn't quite find, you know, the market that I maybe thought they would. You know, there is something that appeals intrinsically, I think, to the geek about the kind of personal computer, or that, you know, mini computer you can carry with you. But in reality, actually, the small keyboard and everything can be a little bit frustrating to use. I think any communicator user will understand that, you know, very passionate about it, but maybe not something that's mainstream. And of course, putting in an expensive hinge and the keyboard and everything else, that can make things more expensive as a device, and people aren't willing to pay the premium that comes with that. I mean, in the world of laptops, maybe they are, because it's got a longer life cycle. But nonetheless, you look at this and go, as a kind of descendant of the Siam 5, where in many ways kind of that modern PDA, and it started to be born with Symbian, kind of the smartphone as well, and the communicator line certainly had something to say there, as did kind of some of the Sony Ericsson devices with the starting with the P800 and going through the kind of the P910. it feels like there is still something that just appeals to me here. And I wonder whether the kind of technology has now got to the point where it makes it even more interesting because there are fewer compromises on the keyboard. You get the really big screen, the hinges and the kind of industrial engineering around it means you can do this kind of very multi-form factor device that does a lot. I suspect if I was trying to call it, I would say it's probably going to take flexible screens to really make this work. Nonetheless, wouldn't it be fantastic to see a Surface Mobile or Microsoft come out and say, you know, this is a new way to do tablets, because we have been pretty stale in the market for the last few years. You know, the iPhone introduced the kind of the glass slab. You know, the tablet has always been kind of a big screen with a bit of a bezel around it. And, you know, we've had improvements on that. The bezels have got smaller, screens have got bigger. But fundamentally, there hasn't been a big change in form factor. And, you know, a lot of people are betting on augmented reality or mixed reality to kind of shake things up in computing. But I wonder whether there's still room for one last hurrah around this form factor with a combination of hinges and flexible screens, and whether that's with a keyboard or not, because obviously you can do the keyboard on the screen. It just feels to me like there's a little bit more to offer there, because everyone likes having a bigger screen. They don't necessarily want to carry a bigger device. Most of the time, kind of focusing it around the phone makes sense. But that, you know, as I say, it's probably the inner geek that is really, I can almost feel a siren call to me. But come on, let's give it one more go. And if anyone's going to try it out, Microsoft with a full Windows 10 device, you know, yes, if they get this right, absolutely, I'd expect Google and Apple to follow in their footsteps. But wouldn't it be great to see Microsoft breaking that new ground and sort of saying, you know, we reinvented kind of the tablet, the transformer with the Surface. We kind of came up with a new idea for a laptop with the Surface Book. But let's have something really radical, really a departure. And yes, that combined phablet stroke tablet, well, however it comes out, I mean, I'd just love to see that.
Absolutely. And as you say, that Microsoft are the hinge champions, if you like. And you rightly pointed out, this is their speciality, you know, producing transforming form factors that actually work and survive in the real world. I would point out that the reason I'm calling it Surface Mobile rather than Surface Phone is it is very much emphasizing the fact that it's taking the Surface ideal and making it more portable and more mobile. It's not trying to replace the iPhone or an Android phone. Whatever that, even in folded mode, it'll be much, I suspect, larger than any of the current smartphones as you know them. It'll also be more expensive. I'm fully expecting this to be £1,000 when it comes out, or over $1,000 in America. So we're talking about a premium mobile device that can do the job of a phone and the job of a tablet and the job perhaps of a laptop all in one. It really will be an all-in-one breakthrough device. But by, as you just pointed out, there are always compromises, and those same compromises stopped the Nokia communicators of the day becoming world-beating. They were absolutely adored by their passionate fans, but ultimately they were limiting once you start to go beyond that enthusiastic subset. So anyway, watch this space. Just one minor data point, Ray. Who do you bank with, can I ask? Who's your bank?
I bank with Barclays.
Oh, that's a shame.
It is, yes. I am a little irritated because I think this is a slinky link to the next story, because Barclays have actually effectively removed support for Windows Phone and Windows Mobile, most disappointingly. If you're fortunate enough to bank with, I think it's RBS, they have a fine new WP application. I'm guessing there's been an update recently.
Yes, they've produced an update, kind of for Christmas, really. And they've been a regular at doing updates over the last couple of years, their Windows 10 UWP app. Also, someone's pointed out that the NatWest use the identical app. So presumably it's a development house producing a banking app, and both those banks have leapt upon it. But Barclays have ditched their old Windows Phone 8.1 app from 2013 or wherever. I do get rather irritated. I've made this rant before, Rafe, but with people, news sites leaping on organization XYZ or developer so-and-so, they've ditched their application. We're not supporting Windows Phone anymore. Well, they thought Windows Phone was an OS, i.e. 8.1, died 2 or 3 years ago, and the applications you're now, quote, ditching were coded 4 or 5 years ago. Of course they're not going to work anymore. I've yet to see a single major developer produce a UWP app for Windows 10, all 600 million users, etc., etc., and then pull that saying, oh, no, not enough enough people are using it. On the whole, once a developer goes to UWP, then there is a future for them, and they do get some return on that. But in this case, there are developers, and Barclays are, their development house is one of them, saying, okay, we can't quite see enough to justify going to a UWP app over people just using the website. And you can kind of see their point. If these banking organizations work just as well over a web browser on a desktop or a tablet, you don't actually need an application at all, and we have covered that in the past.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, also, you just have to look at the number of devices out there when, you know, Windows 10 Mobile in the UK is, you know, at best a percent or so. Of course, you're going to prioritize Android and iOS. I suspect some of the reasons these Remain or UWPs got built is because kind of the strategy just wasn't shifting quickly enough to match the market, because honestly, it's difficult to see a business case being built for these kind of devices. I mean, maybe it's tens of thousands of users, but given that the cost of building applications like this, you do sort of go, you know, you are probably talking about a charge of, you know, maybe 10 to 20, 30, maybe even £50 a user to build it. But actually, then there's a point to make that sometimes bank will say, no, we want to support as many customers as possible, and it makes sense. UWP, of course, adds a little bit to the dimension, because you can look at you know, being able to use it as a banking application on Windows itself. Certainly, the evidence I've seen suggests there doesn't tend to be that much crossover appeal, i.e. people tend not to install an application like this on their Surface or on their Windows computer. But the devices we've just been talking about, the, you know, Surface Mobile, as Steve christened it, you know, that could change that kind of attitude, because it does seem strange to me that the kind of appetite for apps hasn't really transferred from smartphones onto desktop PCs. Yes, of course, people use them in different ways. But of course, part of that is because, as I was alluded to earlier, there isn't that uniformity on the other platforms. It's really only Microsoft that's able to offer that as a thing. And, you know, talking to developers about it, it's pretty clear that actually extending a UWP app up to the desktop, if you build it for mobile, is very easy indeed. Going down the other way, you probably have to think about the UI a bit more. You may have used some things that, you know, don't work on the phone, and obviously, again, they kind of the scale of the market may kind of bias you against that. But yeah, nice to see. And, you know, if you're at RBS or NatWest, lucky to see this. I'm not sure whether they actually build this one internally or whether it's done externally. Nonetheless, you know, they seem to have been pretty loyal to Windows 10 Mobile in the way it's put together. It's sort of more than just throwing a wrapper around a website. So from that point of view, it's good. I don't think we can talk about this now without sort of saying, yes, usual disclaimer about Windows 10 Mobile. Of course, a lot of the banks and the other service providers have withdrawn that application. And, you know, in some cases, I know speaking to them, we can be talking about just a few thousand users, which, of course, makes sense. You know, if you got a few million customers in the UK, for example, and you're talking about 1% of them, yeah, you are very rapidly going to arrive at just, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 users maybe, and it's very hard to justify continuing to support them, you know, versus maybe having, you know, 10 times, 100 times, 200 times that number on iOS and Android.
Absolutely. Well, just finishing off on a more positive note, just I won't go into details, but I've been doing a bit of a festive games rundown, Rafe, and someone was asking in the comments of one of the stories today, you know, where can I find a few good games for Windows 10 Mobile? And of course, we have our own directory. And if you go onto the site, allaboutwindowsphone.com, click on Apps and Games, and there's a whole listing there, hierarchical listing, with about, I think, 50, 60 of the best rated games, to save you looking through all the fakes and the rubbish. And just new in the last week or so, Lego Ninjago, I hope I've pronounced that right. This is all of these are UWP apps, by the way, Rafe. They're UWP games for phone, for tablet, and for desktop, which is kind of interesting that there's a bit of a resurgence in that. Pipeline, a version of the old classic Pipe Mania puzzle. We have Drone Strike 3D Army Stealth Attack. And there are more I've featured in the flow column. All of these UWP games, Rafe. So we're so used to the games being kind of coming from the Windows Phone 8.1 world and being, you know, leftovers from when Nokia was pushing Windows Phone and the games developers were all getting into it. But we've now got a whole rush of UWP games explicitly written for Windows 10 on phone and tablet and desktop. And these are new in the store in many cases.
Yeah, it's good to see. And it kind of makes me wonder whether what I just spoke about with kind of UWP apps kind of not seeming to have the same appeal doesn't apply quite so much to games, and people are using the Windows Store to find games, and developers are kind of making a decision, okay, we'll make a little bit of extra effort and make sure that it gets down onto phone because we can do that. And I suspect a lot of these are built with kind of gaming engines or sort of framework that makes it easy to do that.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, if you're just having to spend maybe, I don't know, 10 extra days of development, and I suspect actually it's quite a bit more than that, to kind of be able to release UWP onto phone as well, it's kind of worth your while doing, because you may pick up those extra sales that help justify the business case. So yeah, it's nice to see. Always good to see a Lego game being featured on the site. And Pipeline, that Pipeline is a classic one to while away the hours while you're waiting for the turkey to cook.
Yeah, I've just spotted a couple more, actually. Fallen Souls 2 Eternal War and Legend of the Skyfish. I should emphasise, actually, I mean, you mentioned people creating these games for the desktop and then sort of making sure they also run well on the phone. And it's not that much extra work, but in many cases... And these are iOS or Android games. All the production work's been done. All the resources have been created. All the logic and of the puzzles and the action and the interaction, everything's nailed down. And they've simply got to do a conversion across to Windows 10 and UWP. So I know we're getting some of these games a couple of months after iOS and Android, but at least they're arriving. So I'm celebrating it with some Flow mentions. So there we are.
Excellent.
I am going to say Happy Christmas, Rafe. I'm on my second glass of sparkling wine now. I have a feeling if I go too much longer, I may become totally incoherent. So I shall say, have a good break, everyone. We will be back in the first week of January, and I'll let Rafe do the traditional sign-off.
That's absolutely right. And yes, very Happy Christmas from me as well, and Happy New Year. We will be back in January for our usual roundup and our chat, and we'll no doubt share some Christmas stories as well. Thank you, as ever, for listening. Thank you also to Steve for all the hard work on creating content and keeping things up and running and keeping me, hounding me to get me back on the podcast before the end of the year, which he's successfully done. Really enjoy talking to you. And I know we get some great feedback from listeners. And as I say, thank you for continuing to bear with us throughout 2017. I guess it's been a hard year to listen to a Windows 10 mobile podcast. And certainly you probably noticed that we've detoured off the topic rather more often of late. I think we'll continue to do that, and we'll continue to chat about mobile and phones and the way we see the shape of technology while throwing in the Windows 10 mobile mentions when we can. We've had a lot of feedback actually recently that people said they like the podcast, they like listening to Steve and I ramble on about technology. It's a real pleasure to be able to do it, and it's a real pleasure getting that kind of feedback. So thank you very much. And I guess I will use this to say goodbye and Happy Christmas and all the best for the new year.